Welcome to Marvelous Disney, the podcast that discusses the most recent doings at one of the more dynamic divisions of the Walt Disney Company, which is, of course, Marvel Entertainment. This is entertainer writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the amazing Aaron Adams, and I are recording this week's episode on Wednesday, November 17th, 2021. Today, on November 17th, Hitmonkey, the Marvel television animated series for Hulu, just dropped. It's 10 episodes, and I think you and I were both moaning about the fact, Aaron, that we haven't had a chance to watch this yet, right?
Yeah, I've been busy in studio working, laboring over hot, fresh cakes of audio, and had totally passed me by that there is a Hitmonkey to help relieve my daily stresses. So once we get done with this, I will then go make a venture to Hulu Land and watch some Hitmonkey.
Yeah, it's 10 episodes, all 10 episodes dropping today. Sorry, folks, we try to do our homework, but of course, I do have an excuse. Nancy and I just got back from Orlando. We wrapped up our Disney Dish Live event on Monday at Everglazed, where they serve donuts as big as your head.
I thought that was a marijuana dispensary in Colorado. Everglazed? What? It sounds like you just got, you know, did a wake and bake, and I'm Everglazed. Okay. It's donuts. I totally misread that in the notes here. I was thinking the wrong trip. Okay.
I shared one donut with Sharon. It was a maple bacon. I basically talked myself into, well, it's got bacon on it. It's breakfast. Mm-hmm. By the way, Aaron, lots and lots and lots of folks at the event were asking about you. They wanted to know how it is that you managed to do as much work as you do for these podcasts, in addition to just traveling, you know, the country, taking in as many events as you do. And I didn't share your secret. So,
well, I will flat out tell you that Indianapolis has this wonderful vehicle program downtown. When you go downtown, they have what are called the green scooters, and they're just little electrified scooters on a battery. You stick in your debt card, and you can just ride it around town and drop it off wherever you get done. You just leave it there, and someone else will use it. And I just took one. I've been using it to go to Oklahoma. I mean, it's really, really slow on the highway, and you do have to charge it every once in a while, but no gas bill, so, you know.
Well, okay. Now you know, folks. Now you know how he pulls it off.
If you see a long-haired dude running down the highway on a little electric scooter, honk and wave, that's me.
Well, speaking of folks with long hair, on behalf of Mr. Testa, I want to thank all the folks who came out for this past weekend's event. Thanks also to Tammy Whiting and her talented team of Storybook Destinations. 4 days of activity, multiple locations, several great meals. All of it came off without a hitch, and we even had amazing weather. It only rained a little bit on Saturday, barely disrupted the scavenger hunt, which also everyone seemed to like. But while Nate and I were out of town, lots and lots and lots of Marvel news happened. And speaking of news, the news portion of today's show is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, a trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience, please book online at storybooksdestinations.com. As we get started here, it's worth noting that Marvel's Eternals was number one at the box office this past weekend. That's the second weekend that this Chloe Zhao film was in release. Pulled in $27.5 million in ticket sales domestically, beat out Clifford the Big Red Dog, which actually turned out to be a fairly strong contender, which was kind of surprising given that this is a film that was really aimed at very small children.
Well, I mean, if it's aimed at the very small children, you're guaranteed to sell at least two tickets, one for a parent at the very least, or guardian, and then the kid themselves. So whereas the Eternals, a single person could go see that, because if they're a teenager, if they're an adult. But if you're talking kids, well, that could be mom, dad, and the kid. That's three tickets. And if you got siblings, well, that's a four-pack of tickets right there. So you can have almost the same level of interest and end up selling more tickets simply because the two youngins require mom and dad along with them to get them into the darn theater.
Interesting point. Okay. Well, The Eternals has earned $119 million at the domestic box office to date, an additional $162 million overseas, worldwide ticket sales of $218 million. On the other hand, Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings did slightly better ticket sales was during its second weekend of release. It did $34 million versus the $27.5 million we were just talking about for Eternals. Aaron, you finally got to see Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. You did the Disney Plus thing, right?
Absolutely. The day that came out, I watched that immediately. I even had my TV converted into 3D for that. I added extra little effect to make it more theater-like for me. Ooh. And it was a really super enjoyable experience. I loved everything about it. Mm-hmm. One thing, it seemed very, you know, House of Flying Daggers type of a movie where they fly a little bit when they leap in the air, right? They've mm-hmm. got that old school wirework type vibe to the martial arts. But one thing I thought was super impressive was the fact that they were able to convey the two different types of fighting styles. There was Wen Wu's style, which was tiger claw, very, very aggressive. And then there was Mom's style, which was much more like a ballet and much more poetic in its movement. And when Shang-Chi fights his father, he starts off with the violent, aggressive, you know, tiger claw style like dad has. But when he ends up switching to mom's style, and they use the same motion where he makes the circle with his foot around him in the dirt, and then he grabs dad by the shoulder and the wrist, and he kind of swings him around in a circle, but they use the same camera movements and the same shots from when they do the fight between mom and dad to when Shang-Chi and dad do that fight, to convey that Shang-Chi has now moved on from one style of fighting to another, and this is why he's winning in this moment. And for someone like me, who is very ignorant of martial arts as a whole, to be able to pick out those differences between those two fighting styles just gives extra credit to the choreographers to really, really nail home that central point of that fight. And again, Shang-Chi flying on the back of a dragon. Never thought that I would see that in a million years, but that actual Chinese dragon look to come busting out of the water just floored me. Like, oh, was not expecting this moment to happen. So glad I'm able to see it now. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed Shang-Chi on a level that I have not enjoyed a lot of Marvel movies in the past. Some, you know, where the bar has been set really, really high nowadays. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get just a really good movie or just a good movie. But this was just, I think, an exceptionally good movie. Very, very great.
Oh, glad to hear that. And more to the point, just listening to your talk makes me think I got to go back and watch that again.
Yeah.
However, worth also noting here that overseas at this point in its run, Shang-Chi seriously lagged behind the Eternals. It had only made $113 million versus the $162 million that the Eternals has made at this point. But that was largely because China refused to let this Destin Daniel Crichton film be shown in that country. And Aaron, I don't know if you saw the news that broke just yesterday about one of the reasons Shang-Chi is yet to be screened in that hugely important for Hollywood market. And it would seem that during this movie's initial action scene, the battle on the bus, we briefly get to see the bus driver's tag number, which is 8964. Chinese social media is suggesting that this is a reference to the Tiananmen Square massacre, which happened on June 4th, 1989, and that the numbers that were used for the bus driver's tag number were deliberately selected to reference this now basically erased by the Chinese government event, 89 referring to the year the massacre happened, 6 the month, and 4 the date. And as I understand it, Disney's really not thrilled that this happened. Production designers at Marvel Studios are insisting just an innocent mistake, that the numbers for the bus driver's tag weren't deliberately chosen to reference anything. They were just numbers.
And
so,
by the way, that we write a date, it should be 8964, which was actually a day, if you look it up right now, on that date in history, Stan Lee spilled a cup of coffee on some of Jack Kirby's pencil drawings, and there was a little fight that broke out between them. That's the worst thing that happened on that date. So China, you can just calm down now, simmer down now.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for clearing that up. Speaking of the bus battle, though, there's a San Francisco MTA bus driver, McAllen. He identifies them. You want to follow him on Twitter. He's at @that_MC. He decided to take the battle on the bus, that action scene, and go frame by frame through it, and then see how it stacked up to the way that the buses actually do run in and around San Francisco. And he put together one epic 50-tweet thread that's really kind of entertaining to read, talking about, oh, well, the bus driver, you know, he wouldn't turn his head. You know, the mirrors are your friends on the bus. Or, oh, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And, you know, he won't get workman's comp for that. And it's well worth looking at. So Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings became available for viewing just this past Friday, November 12th, Disney Plus Day, which we'll get to in a minute, and it'll be joined by Hawkeye 1 week from today on Wednesday, November 24th. On that day, two episodes of Hawkeye will be available for viewing. And I don't know if you've seen what's been bubbling up on Twitter about Vincent D'Onofrio, the general who played King. Yep. He played Kingpin in the Netflix Daredevil series. Evidently, there's a lot of talk about him showing up on Hawkeye, reprising the Wilton Fisk. Is that a Kingpin? Am I getting the name right? Or
yeah, Wilson Fisk.
Wilson Fisk. And what's interesting is Vincent himself is fueling this speculation with what he's tweeting. You know, he's actually been talking up the show like, this is going to be fun. I love these Marvel series. So,
well, that means that he's just not in it so far. You know, it's always, if you're in a Marvel movie, you deny, deny, deny. And then mm-hmm. when it comes out, you're allowed to talk about it. If you're talking about it like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be doing this with Marvel. That's just someone trying to get into a Marvel movie by talking openly about being in a Marvel movie. I would love to see Wilson Fisk come back. Vincent D'Onofrio is so stinking great as mm-hmm. the Kingpin. And yes, to 1,000 times, yes, put him in all of the Marvel movies. He could be the next big bad lurking in the shadows, manipulating mm-hmm. everything in the background. And I would so be on board for that. He is currently underused. So yes, put him to work.
When you get to a certain level or a certain age, think about Alfred Molina. You know, do you suppose Vincent is actually in that class as well, to the effect of, you know, there's only so much Marvel Studios can keep guys of this stature, that sort of thing, under control. Well, hell, on the last show, we were just talking about Bill Murray going, oh, yeah, I'm in a Marvel movie. So maybe this is one of those middle distance non-denial denials or a non-admittance admittance. What do you think?
Yeah, I have no idea. I hope he is. If he's in it, I would just be thrilled because he was great. So,
okay.
Fingers crossed.
All right. So anyway, while I was out of town again during the Disney Dish Live event, you were on top of all this Disney Plus Day stuff. And so, God, there was a tidal wave of it. You know, there was everything from new limited series to one-time specials. I guess we're getting a Werewolf by Night next October, you know, is kind of a special Halloween treat. We also got a lot of talk about new animated stuff. And in fact, I think on the last show, we were talking about how determined Kevin Feige was to keep Peter Parker in high school. So this new animated series, Spider-Man Freshman Year, sounds like that's exactly the wheelhouse. Is we're going to get to see Peter Parker trying to juggle being a superhero and doing high school.
I also think that that's Marvel trying to keep some hand of control over the image of Spider-Man versus, you know, I mean, Sony's, after this movie is done, Sony gets to do whatever they wish with Spider-Man, and they've got all the villains set up with their solo movies. So if Sony ends up taking Spider-Man to go do whatever they choose in the future, this is a way that Marvel can kind of, in animated form, they've got the rights to Spider-Man, so they can still True. Kind of control how the character is perceived and kind of keep him quasi in the MCU via cartoon and go, well, here's the prequel cartoon about how he was, and you know, you've got one full school year, so you better make it good, because what if you go to sophomore year, that's apparently when he was joining Civil War.
Interesting point.
Okay. Yeah. So are they going to go day by day? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, third day of school. Because if they just jump and do one season where he you know, starts school and then by the end of the season he graduates, then we're at Civil War and now you got to come up with something else. So I kind of have a feeling they're going to draw this sucker out.
It's interesting you talk about chronology that way, because the very next thing I want to talk about is this X-Men 97, which comes to Disney Plus in 2023, which they are heralding as a direct continuation of the X-Men, the animated series from 1992. What do you make of this? Did you watch the show when it was originally on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I believe I was doing mornings at the time, and I was able, by the time I would get out of work, I was like getting home at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and cartoons would start coming on, and it was animated Batman followed by X-Men. And you couldn't make a better smorgasbord for a young nerd at that point in history. So yeah, I watched them both. And I got to tell you that nostalgia is a very strong-armed salesperson. Most people stop finding new music to listen to when you're about 35 years old. But you go back 20 years, and whatever 20 years ago was, that's like, oh, that's my jam. And that's when you turn up the knob, because that was when you're in high school. That was when you're out partying. That was when you're getting into college and doing all the, you know, growing up. I'm an adult now. It's that transition from I'm still a kid to I'm now an adult. And that music is from about 20 years ago. So 97 is about 25 years ago, but still it's right at that age range where someone like me has got, it's got a dopamine release. Like I start hearing the and all of a sudden I'm like, X-Men, what, where, huh? And then I start getting all happy and giddy, you know, like a dog that you just got home from work and the dog's already humping your leg. Like, where were you, pal? What was going on? Did you sniff anybody? I'm sniffing you to see who you talked to today. What's going on? Yeah.
It's so funny you say the thing about music, because have you been paying attention to this new Bruno Mars, Anderson .Paak thing, the An Evening with Silk Sonic? They're doing the 70s, 80s style.
Almost like the Commodores or something.
It's got that sort of feel, but again, it's so reminiscent of, you know, when I was high school, college, that sort of period of music. Mm-hmm. And they've done an amazing job of capturing the feel and the sound. And I just, you know, when you were talking about that, where you, you know, it's like whatever music you had your young adult period to, that's what you're fond of. And it was just sort of like, for lack of a better term, this is new old stuff. And in a weird sort of way, that's what they're also trying to do with this X-Men 97, because it's like they're bringing back upwards of 10 members of the original vocal cast. The woman who did Roku, by the way, again, this is Lenore Zahn, who then went on to become a member of Parliament in the Canadian House of Commons.
So she's got to do like a vote or something. And excuse me, I've got to go voice a superhero now that I've done cast my vote for Parliament.
Yeah, I mean, I love this, but they're bringing back the guy who did Wolverine. They're bringing the guy back who did Beast and Nightcrawler, Mr. Sinister. Likewise, the gentleman who wrote the original X-Men, the animated series, Eric and Julia Luland, as well as the show's director, Larry Houston, they're consulting on the show. And the plan here is, I guess there were 76 episodes produced of the original X-Men animated series, but they just supposedly pick right up where they left off. And you can watch those 76 episodes on Disney Plus right now. And speaking of continuations, and I have to tell you, given I've talked about it in the show, not a big fan of zombies, but really enjoyed episode 5 of season 1 of Marvel What If, the What If Zombies episode. So that's supposed to be now a jumping off point for a brand new animated series, Marvel Zombies. It's going to draw inspiration from the Marvel Zombies comic book series. There was a 5-issue run from December 5th through April of 2006. And those were written by Robert Kirkman of The Walking Dead fame. And logline for the show is Marvel Zombies, the animated series, reimagines the Marvel Universe as a new generation of heroes battles against an ever-growing zombie scourge. Also worth noting here that it's going to be directed by Brian Andrews, who directed season one of Marvel's What If? And the head writer on this is going to be Zeb Wells, who I've really enjoyed for a long time. Did you ever see Supermansion? It was a stop-motion show that was done for Crackle by the Stupid Buddies guys.
No, I did not.
It was an equal opportunity offender. It set up DC and Marvel with equal amount of venom and glee. I mean, it was just a really, really funny show, well-written, definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it. But yeah, I guess, again, it's important to sort of stress here that the Marvel What If episode about zombies, it's not necessarily continuing that story. It's more to the effect of, will be done in this style. Though, as I understand it, they are looking for a different sort of animated look for this show. And now, I guess we should launch into talking about the live-action shows that also got talked up. Did you have a favorite out of the pile, or?
Yeah, right now I'm all about Moon Knight. I am a huge fan of everything that Oscar Isaac does. I did give him a 5-minute standing ovation for making a left-hand turn in Rush Hour Traffic. I wrote a book about it. It's going to be out on Amazon, so keep an eye out for that. But besides all that, I can't wait to see what he does with Moon Knight. I've only speculate that maybe Oscar Isaac's beard will get into a knife fight with Drew Taylor's beard. Oddly, Drew does not have a SAG card, but his beard does. It's really, really odd how that works. But yeah, I'm super excited for Moon Knight. I also am very, very high on Ms. Marvel. I just love diversity being added into the MCU, just in the same way that Shang-Chi floored me with a totally new, fresh, vibrant experience that I wasn't prepared for. I'm looking for that same thing from Ms. Marvel. I want to be just immersed in a culture that isn't mine and see what it's all about and experience something new that I don't get on television very often. So very, very much looking forward to that as well. Ironheart also is in that pile of adding diversity to the stew, and thumbs up for that, which should lead to Armor Wars eventually.
Yeah. Now, with Armor Wars, that's Don Cheadle, who's playing Rhodey yet again, who made his limited series debut. You may remember, was it the first episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier where he's basically, Rhodey's talking with Sam about, you really think it was a good thing to give up the shield? Mm. So he's already, you know, been in that space. If we look at Moon Knight as well as Ms. Marvel, these shows are just, you know, 6 episodes each. Though, have you been hearing about Mahershala Ali's version of Blade? I mean, I know we've heard him, you know, in that post-credit scene. Right. For Eternals, you know, and I think it's Chloe Zhao, all, you know, flattered, admitted, yeah, that's him, and he's supposed to be Blade in that scene. Mm-hmm. But supposedly, also in the final episode of the first season of Moon Knight, there's a lot of talk about him possibly showing up.
Oh, good. These series are good places for introducing other characters, I think, that, you know, I kind of sometimes have problems where in a film, the first movie of a hero is all about the origin of the hero. And then all of the sequels are the origins of the villains that the hero is going to fight. And that seems to be a trend that needs to be broken. And so I think that introducing some of these villains in a series where they have more time to breathe and be a little bit more ambiguous as opposed to, I'm the bad guy, mwahahaha, evil laugh. Here's my plan to take over the world. And the thing with Shang-Chi and Wen Wu, he was not there to take over the world. He was there to get his wife back. He was very sympathetic. He wanted his family together. It was very hard to not... usually you just see a bad guy and he's mustache twirling, wants to take over the world, you know, wipe out all the population for whatever reason. This guy just wanted his family and his wife. So, I mean, he was, yeah, a very sympathetic character. So... to introduce Blade and Mahershala Ali in a series, not that he was a bad guy, but just the fact that, you know, you're getting a taste of a character that's going to be in cinematic form, and why not dispense with all of that and let it happen somewhere else? And then when you get to the movie, you can actually hit the ground running because you already know the character.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. But again, what I'm intrigued with Moon Knight and Ms. Marvel, six episodes, whereas She-Hulk has 10. Now, mind you, they do describe that show differently. You know, that it's more of a legal dramedy. And I don't know, by the way, if you were following the controversy about there's an image of Professor Hulk in the his gamma lab, right, running tests on Jennifer Walters. And at that point, evidently, a lot of people picked up on the fact that neither of Professor Hulk's arms were withered or battle damaged or that sort of thing. So it's the effect of, is the setup for this story done during the blip?
Oh, okay.
I like to think I'm observant, and it's like, I didn't pick up on that, but Marvel fans everywhere, it's like, ooh, look at his arm. You know, that means this happened during the blip.
Or it just means that, you know, he is a very smart scientist, and he maybe was able to fix himself in his gamma lab.
But if that, and again, I apologize, we're about
bring
to
it.
Nerd
no, go
out
ahead.
Here.
Let's hear it, yeah.
Well, no. If you think about the post-credit scene in Shang-Chi,
yeah,
when you see Bruce Banner, who's again not Professor Hulk,
I know he's got his arm in a sling, but
there we go.
Know, it's the exact same thing where we make the jump from Thor Ragnarok, or no, it was Infinity War, to then Endgame, where he becomes Professor Hulk, and it was just that boom cut. Yeah, so I did this, and backstory, and now I'm this way. Crazy, right? Could be the same thing when we get to She-Hulk. He's like, so let me tell you a quick story. I fixed my arm. All right, moving on.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of which, again, another thing that the fan community kind of lost its mind about was the image of Nick Fury used to sell Marvel Secret Invasion.
It looks like he's been sitting on a mountain writing a manifesto. What happened there?
I don't know, but he also grew back an eye, so it's like, okay. This is something I enjoy about the Marvel community, that I'm one of these guys, I got one foot in Disney, one foot in Marvel, and don't know it nearly as deep as you do. So, but it's one of these, but again, I pay attention to what they're pointing at, what they're excited about. And it was like, an eye patch was Nick Fury, who, yes, you're right, looks like, you know, he's been away.
I think his beard wants to get into a three-person cage match with Drew's beard and Oscar Isaac's beard, and the winner takes the purse.
Okay. Drew's going to love all these cameos. So, okay. And we have yet to talk about Agatha, House of Harkness. And I know you're on shows past, you weren't necessarily all that enthusiastic about this idea.
Yeah, I'll say bah humbug. I would rather have a different character take that slot. And I love the actress. I liked the character. There's not a reason for me to not want this show other than my hunger for other material. I was never expecting an Agatha Harkness. And now this does show Marvel has got their finger on the pulse of what the audience is talking about. Mm-hmm. Agatha was a huge, huge hit in WandaVision. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Marvel What If zombie episode, and boom, they had a character in the park, the Captain America zombie, that seemed to do well. Next thing you know, they're green lighting a whole animated series of zombies. So they are releasing things on their platform, and they are seeing that if they get mega numbers that day, if Twitter is nothing but trending Cap zombie, well, guess what's coming, folks? A Cap zombie thing. If it's a character, if it's an animated series or whatever, they want to put great content out, and they analyze this stuff. They focus group. They figure out what's best for right now, and can we wait on this, or do we have to strike while the iron's hot? They're making a lot of really quick and smart decisions about what they're putting into the pipeline. And the Agatha one, where it was a hit, and everyone said, this is great. This is the one where I fear that maybe we don't really need that story. Maybe, you know, I mean, I don't know what story they're going to tell, but we already got her backstory, and it seemed like we got her conclusion. So I really don't know. Are we getting a middle portion of her life? Are we getting something that happened after WandaVision? And honestly, I don't care. I would rather get to Ironheart or Armor Wars or She-Hulk or anything else that was promised much earlier that I already had an appetite for.
Got it. I understand. Is this the show where in fact, I want to say it's the WandaVision folks who are riding herd on this one. Mm-hmm. And given how much I enjoyed WandaVision, it's like, okay, this one I'm looking forward to. And at the same time, you know, if we're going to talk about online speculation about the, you know, like, for example, Ironheart, you know, the fans of the comic book are like, you know, there's a Tony Stark AI that she constantly consults. And is one of these things where, you know, should we hope that maybe Robert Downey Jr. in much the same way that supposedly Chris Evans, you know, has signed some sort of deal to come back due to a couple of things? I don't think, though, that Mr. Downey is coming back.
I think the AIs should just be random celebrities, and you kind of have to guess, who's that voice? Who is that? You know, and let him have some fun with it. Robert Downey Jr., he did his part. He started with Iron Man 1. He launched the MCU. Mm-hmm. He saved the MCU. Let the soul rest. He's earned his rest and his paycheck. He's got other work I'm sure he would much rather do that is new and interesting and exciting to him instead of coming in to voice some old dead guy.
All right. And that's probably a solid take on it. And speaking of getting Aaron's take, when we get back, we're going to hear what Aaron has to say about the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer that we have been waiting for, these many weeks and months. It finally showed up just yesterday. So
it did? What? I got to go watch it.
Okay. We'll give Aaron a chance to watch it and be right back. Before we get your opinion on the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer, Aaron, I have a question from someone who attended this past weekend's Disney Dish Live event. I apologize. I'm blanking this gentleman's name right now, and I apologize to him. But this is what he basically asked me. Why does Aaron seem to dislike Sony? He went after the Mobius trailer. He trashed Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which you hadn't seen that movie, right? Or haven't seen it yet.
Not Let There Be Carnage. I won't donate any money to that cause for fear that someone will think that it's my vote that they should do more of them. Mm-hmm. So I withhold my money. I wait until I have a friend that gets a copy of it, and then I'll go watch it over at their house for free so I don't have to spend any money on it. I've got two reasons why I don't like Sony.
Okay.
First is they canceled the mini disc. And I got to tell you, as an audio producer for many years, the fact that you could write and record CD quality audio on a little tiny box that was about 6 inches by 4 inches was such a step forward. And I have like days and days and days worth of audio on mini disc. And then they canceled the mini support for the mini disc. So I invested all of my money into this is the future. I will support this until my dying breath. And then 5 or 6 years later, they're like, yeah, we're done with that. Anyway, beyond that, for Spider-Man specifically, everyone knows that Spider-Man is what I grew up reading. It's how I learned how to read. Every T-shirt I own has got an image of Spider-Man or one of Spidey's villains on it. I got a life-size Spider-Man downstairs. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker's my dude. There's a game going on right now, and it's the MCU and what Sony wants. And what Sony wants is to make a buck, and that's about it, because that's their job. Fair play. The MCU has got a person, Kevin Feige, who's got a plan, and it's got all these woven threads that are all make this beautiful tapestry that we know and love today. And Sony's like, oh, but we got Venom, and we're going to do this, and we've got Mobius, and we're going to do that. And they just get so excited about all the toys they've got, and they just can't wait. And someone else is playing by a completely different set of rules. And I so have wanted that Spider-Man to be perfectly integrated into the MCU without any issues. And it seems like there is this tug of war, and it's only over money. And that's always what these stupid things end up becoming about is we just want more money. We just want more money. The reason that Andrew Garfield didn't get a third is because, yes, it made more than the budget, but not enough more because we just want more money. It's always about more money. And so everyone has said when this third home whatever movie for Spider-Man, it ends the home trilogy and that there will be a whole different Spider-Man thing happening. And they've perfectly set the stage for Venom to jump in there somehow and for Mobius to jump in there somehow. And Sony has worked so hard to show look at what we're going to do. We're going to bring all of this together. And I'm like, yeah, but when you piss off Marvel and you're not allowed back in their universe and the door is shut forever, then what? Because I was really enjoying him playing in that universe. I like when he gets to play with, you know, Iceman and Doctor Strange and all these other characters. Like, there's so many X-Men that he hasn't been. He's been always at odds with Wolverine. He's had a couple confrontations with the Hulk, and we haven't had to have those moments yet. So if Sony says, I just want to play and have it my way, the door to the MCU is shut forever unless a billion-dollar deal is made. And that's where it's stuff just gets stupid because of money. So yes, I'm really down on Sony and just about everything they do. And I wanted Venom to be cool. I watched the first one and it was just too stupid. I could not hit myself in a brick wrapped in a lemon hard enough for the pangalactic gargle blaster to take effect.
Love a good Hitchhiker's reference.
Thank you. Thank you.
My problem is that, I mean, I get what you're saying. And yes, it is. It's always unfortunate when you are dealing with giant corporations that have their own corporate agendas. You know, in fact, just this past weekend, you know, talking with folks at the live event about the whole, you know, Universal has the theme park rights to the Marvel characters and, you know, how unfortunate it is that they can't be in the Disney parks in Florida. And it's just, but it is what it is. I mean, this is, you know, that you know, from Comcast point of view, it's like, we own the set of characters that Disney keeps producing hit films about. And so it's like, and, you know, and think about it, how gleeful are the Universal executives right now over the news of X-Men 97, you know, because really, if you look at the X-Men they have in the park.
Yeah, those costumes are from the 90s. And
there you go.
And they are bringing them back in vogue, so to speak.
That's it, exactly. So it's like, you know, if you were somebody at Comcast, would you? All right, Disney, you're going to have them back now. It's like, no, if anything, it's like, oh, we're
going to buy another 10 years on that deal. Yeah, let it ride.
No, that's it, exactly. And based on the trailer I just saw for No Way Home, I'm looking forward to this movie that much more. I mean, and in fact, a lot of that really is on the back of Benedict Cumberbatch's work as Doctor Strange in this thing, and likewise, Alfred Molina, you know, who I'm really kind of intrigued as to what they seem to be doing with the Sinister Six in this film.
Well, we're only at 5 so far.
Well, okay. Now, a little bit of a spoiler here, because you mentioned Venom and Eddie Brock.
Oh, my God.
What I have been told, and again, I'm this is a spoiler, folks. If you want to jump ahead a minute or so and go into No Way Home clean, you can do that. But supposedly, when this story ends, somehow we've had a reset. And we have J.K. Simmons back as, why am I blanking his name?
J. Jonah Jameson.
J. Jonah Jameson. And he's back at the Bugle. And he's, you know, he's back yelling at people. In the process of handing Parker, you know, an assignment, he turns and goes, oh, by the way, I'd like you to meet, you know, Eddie Brock. So at the end, you'll get to see the Eddie Brock that we've met from the Venom movies. And basically, you have your Sinister Six in this film, but maybe not all together at that moment.
Nope, you know. Nope. Ain't buying it, ain't having it, because they didn't fight together. It shows up as a, hey, we've added a sixth villain after the other five have been defeated, is not the Sinister Six. I will do the old monkey poo in my hand, fling at the screen, out the door. Mm-hmm. Nope, ain't happening. Will not have it. No, thank you, sir. No.
Okay. Well, again, I think I come at this from I like to be entertained.
Sure. No, I'll tell you that the trailer looked great. I'm very excited for what I saw in the trailer.
Yeah,
but I'm only counting 5 villains so far. And if they add a sixth one at the end, that does not make a Sinister Six movie, because they all have to be fighting at the same time for that to count as Sinister Six. Just having 5 get defeated and throwing in the sixth at the end is the Furious 5. One too few, too furious.
All right.
And Vin Diesel can do something. So the thing, there's a number of things about this trailer that I would like to discuss. One of them is that Doctor Strange says that these characters died at the hands of Spider-Man, and that's not necessarily true. Sandman was let go at the end of Raimi's third film. Peter Parker went up to him and was like, "You got a daughter, and et cetera, et cetera. Go be with her." And he turned to sand and flew away. So he never got killed off at the end of that movie. So something is not true necessarily in what is being said. Now, the fact that, and this is where I'm eating my words here of what I criticized earlier, is how Sony wants to do one thing and Marvel wants to do a thing. The story that Peter learns that Spider-Man is responsible for all of these deaths and he wants to be able to save them, this is a huge Peter Parker character-defining moment. That is who that character is in the nutshell. Is he never wants anyone to die or to get hurt. And I really commend Marvel and Sony for finding the essence of this character and letting that shine through in the flash of the five villains and the multiverse and all the other stuff that was packed into this trailer. So, I mean, I really, really do want to say that in this moment, they are showing that they still understand the character. And I'm glad that that's there.
I totally agree. I also, but for me, again, I love the hints here with Alfred Molina, you know, the notion of, you know, the Doc Ock coming up the Cross Bronx Expressway, you know, just before the George Washington Bridge, you know, and he's battling there with the Green Goblin and he demasks Peter. And it's like, you're not Peter Parker, because it's like, you're not my Peter Parker. Right. And the scene later in the trailer where somehow they've managed to trap Doc Ock in the Sanctum Sanctorum, he's being held for in some way, and you know, there's a line there. That Doc Ock is talking to Peter. He's like, "You're flying out into the darkness to fight ghosts." The line that comes after that, where Electro talks about, "You're not taking this away from me." The way I interpret that is these, you know, members of the Sinister Six actually somehow figure out what's going on. That they have somehow been brought back from the dead. You know, and in this particular universe, the stakes are so much higher. It's not just a question of I'm trying to defeat Peter Parker. It's like I'm trying to stay alive. And also what's interesting, the bookend for this trailer, where it starts off with that image of the really beaten up Peter Parker who says, "This is all my fault. I can't save everyone." And then you get the MJ doing the Gwen Stacy fall.
Yeah.
I love the structure of this. It looks crazy ambitious. And yes, I know we have a trailer that doesn't have Tobey Maguire in it, that doesn't have Andrew Garfield in it. And I think this is, you know, you and I have talked about on previous shows about how supposedly Disney and Sony have been fighting back and forth about how to market this movie. Just today I was reading about, you know, I guess it's like that moment. Remember the Endgame trailer where they were talking about who they'd erased out of it? You know, that supposedly that there's that shot on the Statue of Liberty that now for some reason has Captain America's shield. And you see the Lizard, the Sandman, Electro, and you see one Spider-Man jumping at them.
If you look really closely, like Electro is very, very high, and he should be facing off against someone there because he's way too high for the Spider-Man that's in the center of the screen. And then the Lizard is also jumping, and he is way too low. He will never make contact with the Spider-Man that's in the center of the screen. And then the Sandman starts throwing a giant punch, which will in fact hit the Spider-Man in the center of the screen, but nothing else. And it's exactly like in the Civil War trailer. They had no Spider-Man in the two teams charging one another. And
that's
in the Infinity War trailer, we got a Hulk leading a charge instead of a Banner and a Hulk Buster leading the charge. So, yeah, Marvel has been deceptive with their trailers, and for good reason. I would rather have subtle moments changed to hide a surprise that we'll get later on. It's like, you know, it's almost like getting a peek at your presents for Christmas. You don't want to really know what you got. You just kind of want a tease of what you got to build up the anticipation. So while I don't feel that we need three Spider-Men, I am making peace with the fact that we may indeed have three Spider-Man, and I'm okay with that as long as they do it very well. And so far, what I'm seeing from this trailer looks really great. Like you mentioned, MJ falling from the scaffolding. There are so many implications, obviously the Gwen Stacy thing, but also Mysterio in the last movie gave Peter a nightmare vision, a hallucination of MJ falling, and then Pete goes to dive to save her and ends up doing a head plant in some dirt because he wasn't that far off the ground. So, yeah, to have that called back and to be presented in this trailer. Now, some people are speculating on Twitter that if another Spider-Man shows up, it would be Andrew Garfield would be the perfect one to save MJ to redeem himself for failing to save Gwen. And I got to say, that moved my heartstrings a little bit. The notion of him saving her. And
that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there could be some really powerful moments if they do the storytelling. And then it looks like they're doing a great job with storytelling, like I mentioned earlier, with just getting the character of Peter, the essence of him. No.
I think that's a great insight on your part. But more to the point, one of the things I also loved about what they seem to be teeing up here is the notion of Peter going to Doctor Strange. Peter interrupting Doctor Strange while he's doing the spell, which is sets all this stuff in motion. And then, you know, in kind of a, if we go back to the Civil War, the comic book series, where, you know, the notion of having two heroes that were previously on the same side going against one another, the fight scenes that we've seen suggested between Peter Parker and Doctor Strange, I mean, very much, you know, straight out of the comics. And never mind that the last line of the trailer, you know, they're starting to come through and I can't stop them. That to me just seems to be teeing up what we know of the story for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So
it's kind of like back in the 80s or early 90s when Hulk Hogan became a bad guy. It was just so he could fight all the good guys. And you could be like, oh, my God, it's Hulk Hogan going against Macho Man Randy Savage. What is happening? You know, you get to – there's nothing better than having your two good guys get into a disagreement and fighting one another. I mean, heck, Civil War was a bang-up, wonderful movie simply because it was Cap versus Stark. And the bad guy never had to throw a punch in that. He just had to, you know, set up the chessboard, stand back, and let the pieces fall where they may. And that was a wonderful, you know, brains over muscle type of maneuver for that movie. But here in this one, I also want to say that there's two things I noticed. First, the Electro design with the electricity around the head, which harkened back to his comic book design.
There you go. Yep.
That is one of those things that I was wanting from MCU versions of certain characters. And that was why I was almost disappointed. I mean, I love Alfred Molina. Spider-Man 2 is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Great film.
But I didn't need to have him back specifically for a Doc Ock. I was ready for like a Jared Harris, I think would be an awesome Dr. Octopus.
No doubt. But at the same time, I loved that his take on, you're not Peter Parker. Or for that matter, again, that line, you know, the fact you're flying off into the darkness to fight ghosts is this sort of melancholy quality. I mean, but that's the thing. Alfred Molina's take in that Sam Raimi, Spider-Man 2. I love his redemption in that film. So this is...
Which almost makes you think, how can he be a villain? Because he made the full circle. He went from being Peter's mentor to his enemy, back to saving the day and becoming the hero in his own right. Mm-hmm. So to have him show up to be all mustache-twirling villain doesn't seem right. He's got to have... I mean, it's got to be more than just staying alive. He's already sacrificed himself once to save humanity on his planet. He should be helping Peter. You know, it's same for Sandman. Sandman was let go by Peter because they had some sort of understanding about taking care of family. They shouldn't be nemesis in this version. So, I mean, there's got to be some information that's still missing that will be revealed when we get to the full movie.
I have heard some things about Sandman's arc that actually bears out what you're talking about.
Okay.
Folks were pointing out there's a quick shot of Doc Ock with his tentacles sort of forming around him, where if you're paying attention, you can actually, you know, because it's, you know, it's red. Blue and red. Yes, yeah. it's the nanotech from the Stark version of the Spider-Man suit.
That and the head changes from being pyramid shaped to a more square shape. And I was like, it looks like he's adapting some Stark tech there, and I want to see what's up with that. There was a series not too terribly long ago in the comic books called Superior Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. I remember you talking about these. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Dr. Octopus ends up taking over Spider-Man's soul. Like, he, I guess, you know, do a brain swap will be the quickest way of explaining this. Mm-hmm. Where, yeah, he puts his brain in Peter and says, I can be a better Spider-Man than you. Mm-hmm. And he ends up trying to save everybody and realizes how hard it is to be the hero. And I wonder if we could ever get a glimpse of that, just in the same way that we got a glimpse of zombies in Far From Home with the Mysterio illusion of
true.
Like, you know, we don't need to have the full story arc. We can just get that glimpse of a moment and go, oh, that's the nod. So there's really a lot in this trailer that I was very, very excited for. A lot of those little details about, you know, the lizard jumping and Electro high and lizard low and Sandman in the middle. And I'm like, that looks like there needs to be two other Spider-Man in that picture for that thing to make sense. So, yeah, I have a strong feeling we will be getting our three Spider-Men. I hope it turns out all for the best. And, man, I really don't want to see a Venom at the tail end of the credits, but whatever, I guess, you know, let's see what happens. Sony's going to have their way, you know.
And again, we're recording this on November 17th. Spider-Man, you know, No Way Home debuts on December 17th, though I want to say tickets go on sale next week or thereabouts. So very, very, very much looking forward to this. But again, a reminder, folks, that you know, while you're looking for Marvel-related stuff to do before that, Hit Monkey dropped today on Hulu, 10 episodes there. And then next week, November 24th, we will have the first two episodes of Hawkeye. And, you know, Aaron, I'm thinking we're probably going to have to record Wednesday night then, too, so that we can check those two out and see where that show's going to go. So,
yep.
But in the meantime, if you folks are looking for entertaining stuff to do online, following Aaron online, it is always entertaining. I especially enjoyed your Gift of the Magi illusion this week.
I don't know how many people would get that. I'm glad that you're able to pick up on that
one. You know, they explaining, you know, why Len has long hair, you know, just I hope that Laurel can get that pocket watch back. And Aaron, how can they find you on social media to get these great little tidbits?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt. And over on Instagram as well. By the way, check out my podcast, Light the Fuse, covers a whole bunch of stuff you love.
I'm only slightly confused at this point. Okay. All right. If you could do Aaron and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend the show you just listened to, that would be very helpful. Likewise, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, do you want to give them the real how they can chase you down, or you just want them to go?
I get paranoid when people start following me. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you following me? What are you doing back there? Step in front of me. I'm going to follow you. It gets really awkward in the grocery store when that happens. I got a new follower on Twitter. Like, get away. You're too close. 6 feet, okay. 6 feet of distance. Wear a mask.
There you go. There wasn't a lot of that going on at Disney, but we'll talk about that later. Okay. Well, you can find us over Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. And we look forward to seeing you folks there. And we hopeful that Aaron and I hope that you will come back next week, where hopefully we will get to talk about Hawkeye, which there was another trailer for that came out that looked really, really good. And you know, this one particularly threw a spotlight on the Kate Bishop character, and she's very enthusiastic about, you know, trick arrows. So
wait until she gets the Steve Martin arrow that goes through the head. It's a wonderful gag. I love that one. I'm sure Hawkeye's got that in its quiver somewhere. He's like, no, I use that at Christmas parties. It's a hoot. She's like, Steve Martin, who?
And on that note, thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back soon.